Okay, welcome to the latest Brewing podcast. I mean, there can be no doubting the dominance of Brexit in the headlines at the moment and the impact that's having on various asset classes. So today we focus on commercial property, and I'm sure many will recall the challenges that asset class went through following the result of the EU referendum. So particularly relevant at this time, we do hope you enjoy the conversation. But before you listen to that, here are our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation, which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone, welcome to the latest Brewin podcast, a commercial property narrative today, and we're delighted to welcome back a returning guest to the podcast, Ainsley McClellan, the co-lead manager on the Janus Henderson Commercial Property Fund. Ainsley, great to see you again. Thanks for sparing the time. I think the way we were going to conduct this conversation is, first, of course, you can't have any investment conversation without a reference to Brexit, and property is clearly caught in that conversation. Then we'll look at really the portfolio. You know, what is in the portfolio? What's attractive? Lots of concerning headlines out there, you know, about retail and things like that. So we'll get on to that, and then we'll round out with just a couple of comments on some individual equities that ostensibly look a bit cheap. So let's start on Brexit. We're not going to ask you which way it's going to go. I don't think anyone has any sort of clear insight on that. But what we would say is, if you add up all the different permutations that amount to avoiding a no deal, the probability of those is far higher than a no deal. But the probability of no deal is not zero. Mm-hmm. So if we do get that low probability outcome, you know, what assurances or what can you tell us about how you've managed the fund, the position you've got the fund into, that you are far less likely to go through the same challenges that the fund went through and the whole industry went through post-referendum?
Yeah, okay, so there's actually quite a few streams to that that I think it's important for you to understand. So the first and probably one of the most important from everyone's perspective is our liquidity day to day. And if you think to, you know, early 2016, when, you know, us and most of the peer group sat somewhere around sort of mid-teens in terms of our liquidity buckets, you know, now we're sitting up in the mid-20s. And that's acknowledging, I think, that while we want to give performance, and we have been giving performance, we've done about 4% year to date, that we also understand the investor feels very uncertain about, you know, exactly what to do with your money in many respects, and how to get through this next period of a very opaque landscape like we've had. So we fully acknowledge that's important to the investor, and it's important to us.
And you recognise that. I mean, thinking about some of the challenges last time, actually, it wasn't this fund that necessarily got the ball rolling. Do you recognise that your peer group have changed in a similar manner?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good peer group. I think that's always important to mention. It's that everyone's good at trying to meet the objectives, but we all have different ways of doing it, and we have different assets to work with. There's a general consensus that we're all in around these areas. If you look at all our fact sheets, we're all in the sort of mid-20s. Not all of us, that's actually not completely true, but there may be some that don't quite have that. We can't control that. We can't control what happens in another fund, but of course we want everyone to be on the, you know, on the right path. And we couldn't control if another fund did have to suspend for any reason. That's nothing, again, that we can do about it. What I would say about the investor base now, 2 years on, is it's a slightly different shape from the investor base that we probably had back when we all discovered that we were to be leaving the EU. And some of that money that kind of moves very quickly and can create some quite sort of volatile and dramatic effect on fund flow. So, you know, I hope that goes in our favour, that the understanding of what people are actually invested in is there. And I think, you know, we go into a lot of detail with anyone that wants to know about the fund on exactly what assets we own, where they are, and ask them to where possible, go past them. And we've got a whole interactive map on the website so they can do that and judge for themselves if they feel these are the kind of assets that will go the distance if, you know, things are tough for the economy over the next 24 months.
Well, I think, thanks, Ainsley. You've tackled that very neatly. I think there's lots of, you know, one can never give complete assurance, but there's plenty of reasons there why, you know, we shouldn't see the same issues. Not only, not least, because we still think that no-deal Brexit is a very low probability outcome.
Yeah, and I think it's worth me mentioning, and I actually very clearly remember a conversation, Ben, that you and I had back in 2016, is that we have great liquidity within our assets, but it's very important to us that when we are selling assets, that we're selling them at the absolute best price we can be. So, you know, there's the cash element and your liquidity bucket of your cash and some securities as well. But there's also the actual liquidity that's within the tangible assets element of the fund. I know it's deemed a very illiquid asset class, but actually, you know, there's great assets, great, very core styled assets, very prime assets that do well in lots of markets. And, you know, they do sell and we sometimes do buy quite quickly. So, you know, there's actually a bit of extra liquidity there that comes through naturally. And, you know, the fund never stands still. There's always a pipeline of things going on and money coming in at different points. So it's, you know, there's potentially uptick in liquidity as we're going forward as well over the back end of the year in Q1 next year.
Okay, well, let's get into the portfolio now then. And I guess the part of the market that's getting all the headlines is sort of retail and the challenges that sector's coming under.
Yes.
You know, one might look at your fact sheet and see there's quite a bit of retail. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Is so important because the media, you know, really are taking this one and really running with it, there is absolutely a structural change taking place in retail. It's long overdue. It's finally happening. There's been, you know, a number of administrations. I'm sure after Christmas there'll be many more, many retailers that need to be flushed through, and a whole sort of an emphasis coming through, I think, as well from us as consumers, not only of that efficiency or the experience, but also a conscious consumer, somebody who actually doesn't want to have loads of plastic, somebody who does want to know their clothes are not for one wear and throw away. And, you know, there's a changing shape in so many levels, so many layers of retail. But what we've got in the portfolio, and it's really important to sort of pick this out, and I am going forward on the fact that you're going to try very hard to make sure that you can see more clearly what's actually going on in the retail element, is that we have an overweight position to supermarkets, which sit, you know, at sort of yieldier, so it's 5.5-6% yields, very helpful for a dividend, doing very well, and particularly the ones we own. You know, they're strong contributors. They have long leases and often RPI or fixed kicker leases. We have London high streets. So, you know, we've got your Dulwich, your Bermondsey, we've got Kilburn, assets that have thriving high streets where footfall is great, the retailers are strong, and, you know, we just add there, we've had rental growth there in that sector. It's one of probably the most positive sectors from a research perspective is actually London suburbs. And then Southeast Industrial, so we've got for the likes of our retail warehouse park at Crayford, we've got some very strong retail warehousing in Purley Way and Croydon, again assets that are doing very well, and I continue to see asset management opportunity and growth there. And then when you look at our regional high streets, we have very little of it. So, you know, we have one in Cardiff, one in Nottingham and one in Manchester, and, you know, we've just locked in an uplift at the rent review and the one in Manchester. We're doing a regear and one of the other ones. Things are still happening at that end of the market. I think what's much more susceptible and where the media is right to focus is big shopping centres, that, you know, the very big fashion park retail warehouse parks where it's been dominant to retailers providing, you know, clothing. These areas are anything over 25 million that sits in that fashion park or especially regionally or shopping centres is definitely susceptible to significant shift in value. And I think the rents there in a lot of these parks are quite challenged. So I think that's an area to very much watch. We don't actually have any fashion parks in the fund. We do have one larger regional retail warehouse park, and it's proving its rental story, so it's not susceptible to move backwards in rent. So I think, you know, it's being realistic about what's actually there, and I think for our job should be to be much clearer with you about what's actually in the retail element of the portfolio, because it's actually been quite a long lease base for us. It's one of the lowest voids in the fund is actually our retail, but we have had administrations. We're not immune to that, and I think as we go forward there will be more of that.
Well, yeah, perhaps a bit of education for us on this front? I mean, we read a lot about sort of CBAs, these sort of company voluntary agreements. This is where
And it's quite confusing because you think, oh, home base have gone, but then home base is open on the road. So, you know, these guys, they have to be quite savvy about how they do it, and they've got certain ones that don't trade well and they do want out of them, and they'll offer up, you know, they'll stay for like a zero rent, or, you know, they'll kind of make it, you know, very much in their favor.
Are these companies coming from a... I mean, if you take a company like Next, it's sort of in the headlines that they've renegotiated
lots of power to do that.
Yeah, so you do it from a position of strength, do you, rather than, you know, is it a vulnerable high street?
It depends what you've got. It depends. I mean, if you've got a vulnerable high street, yes. I mean, the landlord's probably on the back foot, aren't they? If you don't own an area that's, you know, feeling that pain, that had a BHS that went, that had a department store that's gone. I mean, we don't own any department stores in the fund. We haven't had these stories. But I think, yes, there's, of course, a big advantage to the retailer if they know they're in a location where, the tide is against that community. If they don't stay, it could be problematic for them. And they've, you know, clearly they're going to try and do the best deal they possibly can. But a good example is someone at Homebase where, in fact, they are, we had four Homebase, but they're all still in there trading and paying pretty much a full rent. You know, so we actually haven't had any fallout at rental level, albeit if we owned a much poorer located home base, they probably wouldn't be there at all. So I'm one of them, actually. We've got an agreement for lease with a food retailer to go in there. So ultimately that tenant will come out and we'll switch them over. So, you know, we're always looking at ways to get more dynamic, to create ultimately as much security on the income platform as possible for everybody, so they really know where that income's going to be going.
So do you think this sort of CBA, this restructuring of leases on behalf of the sort of the tenant driving that, you know, is that, how far could that sort of sweep across all these asset classes, even into the high quality assets that you hold? Is there sort of a bit of hype about this, and actually you have a bit more power than as landlord than we might think?
I mean, we haven't personally had too much of that. I think that the stores we've got trade well, that people want to be there. I think there's probably in certain sectors of the market, you know, shopping centres and, you know, outlet malls are naturally lending themselves more to turnover rents. And I think that, you know, the Holy Grail used to always be a 15-year lease when I started in the business, and then it was a 10-year lease. And with retail now, sometimes a 5-year lease would actually be better, because then the landlord's got a bit more flexibility as well. If it's not working, having that style of retail in a scheme that needs to keep you know, exciting a consumer to come into that place rather than the place along the road.
Okay, and before we get on to talking about some individual securities or the equity market, you know, what else is in the portfolio that sort of differentiates you, or indeed excites you, or you're feeling most confident about?
I think an amazingly positive takeaway, I think, in terms of the work we've done over the past few years, is when we look at the alternatives in the funds, you know, they've become a really big component and a big contributor to us. Care homes, student accommodation, we've had...
Student accommodation is one that data centers. Catches a bit of interest.
With students, so we tend to buy very... you know, very good university locations, and they've done well for us. I think we bought well on them early enough that we did fairly well in terms of their growth.
Yeah.
And the same with the care homes. We really enjoyed a very sharp inward yield shift on them, and they were even giving capital growth over the first two quarters of this year again. So they're, you know, periodically they are still giving extra. But the diversification is really, I think, one of the main takeaway points, because where we are seeing this restructure in retail, and we're not, it's not, you know, beyond us to feel it. And we have had outward yield shift on some of our retail, but you wouldn't really have noticed, because we've still got such great asset management and growth stories in other parts of the portfolio at any given time, that it would even itself out. I do think Brexit could be very challenging for tenants in the regions from an office perspective, if it's particularly testing, which it kind of feels like, you know, what are we in for? Is a tenant going to take a 10-year lease when they don't know how their business is going to work after Brexit? Probably not. And we're not really, we shouldn't be taking risks with your money if we can't say, oh, we get these buildings let time and time again and see a growth story there. You know, it's irresponsible of us to do that. And if I can't be sure of that, then I shouldn't be putting money there. So we're clear about why we do it. The retail element is diverse, and hopefully I've explained that. And then, you know, one of my darling sectors is, of course, industrial logistics, multi-lets. Yeah. I love all that sector. I think that's where our trophy assets genuinely are.
I mean, that's sort of quite a well understood story. Have they got expensive at all? Or
so we've been quite, I mean, hopefully we'll be proven to have been quite savvy in what we've done. We want to keep accessing that stock where we can, and we have bought into not large lot sizes, but we've bought into areas where we really like the locational story, and we've bought from a developer where we're taking on the letting risk, and that building is under offer in a very strong location. And it's the new headline rent for that location. So taking on a bit of letting risk to end up with a prime building without going in at these very sharp yields, because it has become, you know, a sector very well documented, lots of people seeking to own it. We acknowledge we have to access it in a smarter way because we can't afford to go in at these sharp yields. But I think where we are very strong as a team is, you know, one team, one dream. We're all focused on exactly what we want to get done. And the guy, Robin Hutchison, who heads up my asset management, I mean, it's absolutely his forte. And, you know, he had it let, he had it under offer to let within a couple of months of owning it. So, you know, it's a key area that you should expect us to deliver for you, is that kind of gritty asset management work where we maybe buy into some void, but the reality being that it's our opportunity to give you a better let, more prime portfolio than we had before. And we will keep doing little bits like that where we see great opportunity. We also, it's worth me just adding, I know we're probably running out of time, but it's we have, you know, we are buying in Croydon, and we have exchanged to buy the Toys R Us, which sits behind our John Lewis and our PC Curry. So we are actually buying into administration as well.
Yeah, okay.
And that's a fantastic opportunity to, we could let it as a retail portfolios like ours and all the other portfolios you look at, you know, where the stories are stronger than the economics. So, for example, demographics. You know, care homes, we need good quality bespoke care homes in the UK. We have a massive lack of them. We've had planning permission to build our fourth one, to have a fourth one in the portfolio on a site at Cambridge that we already own, has a different use, and we're going to add a little care home there. You know, where we can be, where you should expect us to deliver all the extra that makes it worth you being in funds like ours, where we're not going to take risks with your income, but we will deliver extra asset management over a time where, you know, really it's probably a bit less exciting than it was 4 or 5 years ago, where inward yield shift seemed to be kind of the gift of the day from the valuers.
Oh, well, it certainly was worth adding, Ainsley, so it was a fascinating insight. So as we round out now, I guess some investors will be eyeballing, looking at the property space and eyeballing UK REITs and seeing something quite cheap. I'd be interested to get your take on that valuation argument, but also I guess there are messages here about the investor experience of, you know, assets, funds like yours versus holding UK REITs.
Yeah. I mean, each investor has their own objectives from what they want. We're trying quite hard, I think, to be quite non-correlated with equities.
Yeah.
I do like a lot of the bigger UK REITs. We do hold a small percentage in the fund, in the liquidity basket, to try and get extra dividends where we can, and give you, bearing in mind we're holding extra cash, we're trying to give you the best return we can.
Yeah.
But I don't enjoy the volatility. It does stress me out my box. You know, I think that it's great when it's just incrementally moving, but it could, for example, where we're doing great asset management and delivering, I don't know, say £7-10 million uplifts, you know, you can see that get wiped on securities in a very short space of time. So, you know, it doesn't, you know, for I think what we're trying to achieve long term, where we would rather be intangible assets, that's our skill base. However, I do agree some of these look compellingly low, and if people can handle a bit more volatility, which they potentially will feel, then, you know, there are clearly some wins to be had.
Highly likely to
feel. I mean, it's almost the guarantee is, like, what can you expect from your day? A bit more volatility.
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, to my final question then, political calamity aside, you know, is 2019 looking like a rewarding year for this asset class?
It's looking like, to me, because we have got that diversification, there will could be continued outward yield shift on retail. I think that we'll more than offset it with what we've got going on in the rest of the portfolio. And if we're, you know, the average lease length is well over 10 years. RPI index-linked leases are well over a third of income coming to the fund. The tenant base sits in the top quartile of, from an IPD or MSCI perspective, in terms of their Dun & Bradstreet rating for the income to the fund. So we should be good for the income and the dividend, and that's incredibly important to us, that we don't let anyone down on that. And then any extra wins will come through, for example, things like the building I mentioned, getting that let, getting you know, some of the small developments we're doing finished, and there's huge demand for them already occupationally. So I think there's some really good, really positive asset management wins coming through over 2019, but it's about dividend plus asset management. It's not about a capital growth story.
Okay, well, Ainsley, thank you so much for that very neat summary and yeah, your insights into the structure of the fund and the challenges ahead, but the opportunities that are there as well. So a really helpful update. To our listeners, let us know what you think on Twitter, referencing hashtag Bruin Podcast, or leave a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. You know, however you listen to our podcast, let us know what you think. But until next time, many thanks for listening.